The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Hello, wrestling fans. It's time for the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. The World Wrestling Resource was made that you as a wrestler, parent, coach, or fan can have access to all the resources of the very best in the world of wrestling. I'm three-time wrestling writer and broadcaster of the year, Jason Bryant, and I want you to join me, along with John McGovern and world champions Terry Brands and Dennis Hall, as we talk training tips, topical discussion, mental preparation, and more on the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. World Wrestling Resource is sponsored by Defense Soap and Compound Clothing. Find World Wrestling Resource on Facebook at facebook.com/World Wrestling Resource and follow us on Twitter at WWRESO and, of course, on the web at WorldWrestlingResource.com. Now on to the show as we join John McGovern, Terry Brands, and Dennis Hall. And welcome to episode 11 of the World Wrestling Resource Podcast. I'm Jason Bryant. Today we're joined with Dennis Hall and John McGovern, and we at the World Wrestling Resource believe responsibility, character, and leadership are the traits of a true champion. Champions become champions themselves, and as coaches, we provide the resources for champions. Integrity, excellence, and teamwork are the core values of the World Wrestling Resource. And today, we have an interesting discussion on hand. We're going to talk some international wrestling. We're going to talk about peaking for the high school season. We're also going to talk about the national duels in attendance and some interesting dynamics coming out of the world of folk-style wrestling. And right now, we'll just start with the international scene as Iran just hosted a 15-mat tournament over three divisions with over 100 weight classes. The big thing there is they drew 8,000 fans to watch. And, of course, the Iranian press was trying to submit this to Guinness as the biggest Olympic-style wrestling tournament. First thing we got to say, guys, is, hey, whoa, stop the presses. We've got Fargo last year with over 4,100 athletes. So, first off, John, let me get your impressions of what you think about what Iran has done with this massive wrestling event. And, of course, they're trying to bill it as something bigger. But I think we Americans have that record.
Yeah, I think you're right, but it's good for media and marketing. The event itself was good. They were probably the first to actually submit to the Guinness Book of Records. I don't know if it is the biggest wrestling event, as obviously Fargo has more competitors, but they used the old Fila mat markings, and I think maybe those mat markings and then the visual presentation of those 15 mats was good for the media, and they broadcast it on TV, and it was kind of something to get alongside United World Wrestling to push, wrestling is a big event and try and get it a core sport in the Olympics.
Dennis, what's the biggest international tournament you've seen in terms of mat space? Because a lot of them seem to be the 4 and 5 mat setups.
That's all I've seen overseas. I haven't seen any big ones like that over in Iran. But most of ours are just senior levels that I've been to. So it's good to see Iran doing that that many competitors in one arena and then having 8,000 fans. That's the thing we lack a little bit in the U.S., out at Fargo. I know there's fans out there, but it'd be nice to get more people following these athletes.
So, Dennis, one thing about Fargo is obviously, sometimes it's tough to get to for the fans, but what we've got there when you're training kids to compete for that is an Olympic-style, international freestyle and Greco-style tournament. The new bracketing system is more in line with the high school kids. I mean, we've got a gem of a competition out there. What do we got to do to get more kids to compete out there and maybe get some more fans to show up? I mean, these are the kids that are going to go on to eventually win NCAA titles and hopefully World and Olympic medals.
I think the biggest thing to get more kids to compete is find them good quality rooms that offer freestyle and Greco during the springtime. Right now, I know in Wisconsin, once folk style gets done, there's probably 5-6 clubs that keep a strong showing of interest in freestyle and Greco going. I'm one of them. I know Fox Valley Elite over in Appleton's one. Then you got Advanced School Wrestling down in Madison. You got Ringer. So you got 4 or 5 places to train only, because a lot of the high schools roll off their mats and they don't keep a freestyle and Greco season open. And I think a lot of that is due to mat space, because then you got baseball or softball, and they need the gym space. They track and field need areas for doing stuff. So biggest thing for us is we got to get more programs out there teaching freestyle and Greco. And to me, that's what I see as a problem. I think the kids would love to do it, and we got to show them that by wrestling freestyle and Greco that they're going to develop overall more mat awareness and a different level of competition, because in freestyle and Greco, you're wrestling every second. In folk style, you can stall more, and it promotes a lot more scrambling for freestyle and Greco. So we just got to keep promoting the sports. I think a lot of times we promote the folk style more than we do freestyle and Greco in this country.
I'm going to throw some stats at you because I've been tracking this for the last 20 years. Not me. I've not been looking at it for 20 years, but I've gone back 20 years since I can find some championship stats. So let's look at 2014 at the Division I level. There were 80 eligible wrestlers who competed at the NCAA championships that earned All-American status. And when I say eligible, that means they were American students. They were eligible to compete in Fargo. We've had years where we've had some international athletes that were, they didn't have the ability to wrestle because they were obviously living overseas. But of the 80 All-Americans last year, 50 of them placed in Fargo across both styles and both age groups. 18 of them competed and did not place. So you had 85% of the Division I All-Americans last year at least competed in Fargo. That's 68 of the 80. And of those, 62.5% were place winners. Of the champions, 9 of the 10 champions last year competed in Fargo at some point during their career. And if you look back over the 20 years, that clip of the champions is about 79.5%. of NCAA Division I champions since 1994 have competed at Fargo or, you know, where Cedar Falls, Iowa City, Warrensburg, wherever it would have been.
Yeah.
And the overall percent that competed was about 83%. So, you know, you can make those correlations with a lot of things. But when you look at the best of the best, the cream rising to the top, you know, you want to be an NCAA champion and a World Olympic medalist. You know, starting in Fargo is a good place to start.
No, I agree. I think that's what we're lacking in the U.S. is the transition from folk style or freestyle or Greco. And I think the kids that do it are successful. And we just need a bigger group doing it.
Now, John, at the Division III level, I haven't gone through and broken out the Division III stats. And a lot of the times the kids that place in Fargo maybe aren't looking at the Division III route. But what you've seen at the Division III level, not just at your program, but across the board, there are these kids that go out there and they're placing in Fargo, but you know they're looking for that different opportunity or that different – I mean, A.J. Kowal at Stevens Tech is a good example. He was a double finalist last year. He's wrestling Division III at Stevens Tech. So, you know, you've seen those kids in Division III.
Yeah, we got a Greco Fargo All-American freestyle last year, and Joey Cisneros from California. And so he was a double All-American last year. And, yeah, you do see some of those guys that, you know, they compete year-round, and they got to, you know, that's what they're going to need to be successful at any level, at the collegiate level anymore, is to train year-round. And so Fargo keeps those guys engaged, you know, year-round.
Dennis and John, there's another thing that was brought up about this event that was in Iran that we didn't touch on initially was the fact there were women spectators for the first time, and this is a country where typically women have not been allowed to watch wrestling. Last year, it made not just headlines here in the U.S., it made worldwide headlines when Kiki Kelly, the team leader for Greco-Roman this cycle for USA Wrestling, was in the arena. She was with Team USA at the World Cup, and, you know, Kiki was one of the first women known under the at least the current regime in Iran to attend and watch wrestling, and now we're seeing more women spectators. I mean, that can't be anything but a positive for the world of wrestling worldwide.
Yeah, to have a country like that realize that they're missing a part of their fan base is huge. I think the more people we can get involved in watching the sport, the more we're going to be able to get on television.
Yeah, I think it's really, really big for the growth of our sport and the women's side of it. This weekend, you got the Women's College Wrestling Nationals in St. Louis, Missouri. And a lot of growth of college women's programs across USA. But from a world standpoint, wrestling is definitely a sport that seems to be unifying the world. And to get the Iranian president out there and then to get the women to be able to watch the matches in Iran as spectators is a great basically political force, and it shows the strength of wrestling. So I think that's awesome for wrestling and for women.
Now, also, Dennis, we've got Kiki's going back over to Iran with the American contingent for the Takhti Cup, and this is named after a legendary wrestler in Iran, Takhti, that, you know, he allegedly committed suicide way back in the day. There's some shenanigans alleged about how he passed away, but that was actually the incident that caused the Iron Sheik, a well-known professional wrestler, to leave Iran, ended up training with the Minnesota Training Center up here in Minnesota, which became the Minnesota Storm. And, you know, there was a documentary about the Iron Sheik, and in the beginning of that movie, he talks a lot about Takhti and him wrestling in Iran and then fleeing afterwards because he was becoming a known name. So it's pretty interesting that the Takhti Cup, named after one of the greatest Iranian wrestlers. And then to go back to what we were talking about with the women's wrestling, Kiki Kelly there with the Greco contingent this year. Again, 2 years in a row, Kiki's been there in Iran with our wrestlers.
That's good. I think it just shows that we're moving forward in this sport. And I think to have her presence there is just opening more eyes that, you know, women can enjoy wrestling and be part of a great sport.
Sticking with the international theme, you know, the United World Wrestling has embraced various folk style and traditional wrestling styles, and one of those is the American folk style. And for those listening, understand, folk style is not just a term that's specific to American. I guess it means the native style of a country. A lot of times people will look at folk style and be like, oh, that's the American college style. No, it's the American college style is our folk style. In Africa, it's a lot of the beach wrestling and the sand wrestling. In Russia, there's Sambo is sometimes referred to as their folk style. And, you know, in Turkey, it's the Turkish oil wrestling and the belt wrestling and things of that nature. But with American folk style, we're sending Rusty Davidson, a high-level official within not just the U.S., but the world, to do a bronze-level clinic in Abu Dhabi, of all places. John, what are your thoughts there?
Well, that's a big, you know, place for MMA, and it's probably a place where you can get a lot of publicity and marketing for USA Wrestling, so it's probably good for USA Wrestling and good for folk style wrestling.
And a lot of expats over there, and then the term meaning Americans living abroad or internationals living abroad. I mean, we see that on the House Hunters International all the time, you know, people looking to buy a place in Dubai. But and Dennis, here's something to consider with this, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not an expert by any means on the grappling, the MMA world, or submission wrestling, but the Abu Dhabi Combat Club Submission Wrestling World Championships, as it says, is a competition with professional athletes who've been in jiu-jitsu, wrestling, judo, sambo, shudo, and mixed martial arts. So the American folk style of wrestling with a lot more control, it's more mat wrestling that seems to go in line with MMA in terms of being able to hold your opponent down and bar their arms and put them in situations. It seems like a folk style clinic over there might, you know, expose what we're good at in America with our collegiate and high school style of wrestling to the world, to those athletes in jiu-jitsu and judo and sambo who sambo's familiar with it, but those styles of fighting and grappling that they may not typically see in USA Wrestling going to be showing, hey, here's what the Americans do. Here's how you can do it.
No, I think it's great. It will bring, I don't care what style of wrestling it is, to the front of the MMA world. I think a lot of the champions in the UFC have wrestling background. They've wrestled when they're younger. And, you know, I think that wrestling is becoming bigger and bigger, and more people are cross-training with wrestling to compete in the MMA or the grappling type stuff because of the control, how we know our body, how we're your offense, but you can also be counter offense at the same time. So I think it makes a big difference for those countries that want to learn this different discipline. I think in order to be, you know, a top level competitor at MMA, I think wrestling is a key background that you need to be proficient at to be successful. And I think a lot of the people are hiring wrestling coaches and doing things like that because they know that wrestling is one of the key elements to be a good fighter.
And now, Dennis, in your travels, I guess, John, you can also pipe in on this with your travels overseas. How often did you guys get questions about the American style? I remember Flow Wrestling was showing some videos to Russian wrestlers, and they wanted to see what they called it, English wrestling. And Joe Williamson was telling me they were showing a scramble from an NCAA finals. It might have been Delgado. It might have been somebody that knows that scrambles a lot. And they sit there and they say, look, no points, no points, no points. And the international wrestlers are baffled. And they're like, what? So how often, Dennis, first, did you get questions about the American college style of wrestling when you were training overseas or traveling overseas?
You know, it was more from my partners that came over from overseas. I really didn't get many questions when I was overseas, but we trained in a college room and we'd wrestle grackle, but yet sometimes we'd go in right as the college practice was finishing up, and they're like, you did this when you were young? Why? You know? So it was more a confusion as to why we didn't just do one style or the other as far as Greco and freestyle. Why we wrestle folk style, I guess, was the main question I got. They didn't understand why.
John, any experience with that type of situation?
I mean, not really. I mean, I didn't go as many places as Dennis, but, like, you know, just being, like, in Cuba, those guys didn't get over to U.S. much. Or, I mean, they did, but it'd be, like, you know, at, you know, wrestling events, but, you know, Kiev, Ukraine, and different places. But mostly I think those guys now with slow wrestling can see the matches online and kind of get exposed to it. Otherwise, like Dennis said, they have to kind of come here and hang out and see our training. So I think most of them, you know, they're just being on that level, you know, on the senior level doing freestyle Greco and assuming that's, you know, they don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. But I think now with USA Wrestling pushing, you know, the folk style wrestling and now beach wrestling and then the flow wrestling websites, they probably are seeing more of that. But, you know, Jason, wouldn't you say a lot of wrestling, you know, that we're doing in the U.S. is to push towards, you know, a little bit more like Russia, get more body awareness, gymnastics, tumbling, and then, you know, work into the development of skill sets and foundation wrestling and then competitive level. And, you know, USA Wrestling, when I look at Mike Clayton, when they talk to the coaches, they talk about not rushing those youth competitors to compete so early for matches, but get development, get skill sets. And the reason why they say that they're involved with that is they want to make sure that if it is happening, it's happening correctly. So they're running tournaments and they're trying to put time limits on it for parents and kids, try and make it fun. And then the weight cutting, keep an eye on that and try and keep it healthy and safe for the kids. So that's why you see USA Wrestling in terms of what I'm seeing from Mike Clayton is, you know, if kids are going to be doing it anyway in the U.S., they're trying to make it, you know, done better.
Well, where I sit, and this is not as a coach, this is just I'm drawing my own personal experience, which, again, wasn't very long. But when I started wrestling when I was 16 years old, I made the mistake of entering a tournament after two practices in my life. And I think we're seeing that even at the 5 and 6-year-old level. It's like little Jimmy goes to his practice and he's running around with his headgear that's too big and his singlet's too big. And he ends up playing like plays fort with the wrestling dummies instead of actually, you know, working on a collar tie or positioning. And at that age, I think, you know, they're kids, they're distracting. But what I found initially when I wrestled the very first tournament I ever did and I got crushed, it was ugly. I remember walking in with my high school coach looking at a 7-year-old going, hey, coach, that kid knows more than I do. Just joking. He looks at me and goes, yes, he does. And it just kind of was like, okay, coach is being serious here. I lasted 2.5 minutes in that match. I'll make that point there. The guy was a state runner-up. I actually came looking for our starter at that tournament because it was the only guy in the area he hadn't beaten. And the guy starting ahead of me was a 4-time regional place winner and 4-time qualifier, state runner-up as a senior. But so he came looking for him, and he got me. That was kind of an eye-opener. But I stress this point that practice, I don't think we need a whole lot of competition. I mean, when you get to the elite level, I guess, Dennis, you can speak on this after my point here, maybe to combat it with maybe some experience that I don't have, obviously, which is quite a bit more. But I think I see these tournaments, and this is one reason why I like freestyling Greco as a cross-training aspect, is if you're out there and you know one move and you're wrestling the same style of one move constantly, what happens when you get into a season, if you're a cradle guy and you're wrestling a guy that knows how to keep his head up and not go to cradles, what else do you got? Or if you're finishing a takedown wrong or you're riding a wrist ride or a bar arm wrong and you just constantly do it wrong, it's so hard to correct a bad habit. I want to stress practice more, competition less when you're younger, You know, I think, you know, Pat Tosi from the NWCA wrote a blog about his kids getting into wrestling, and they didn't compete. All they did was go to practice. And to me, practice was fun because I was learning. Granted, I was getting the crap beat out of me, but I was learning, and it was like, okay, when I went in with the double leg, my, you know, head's down, I'm just doing all these bad things. And if I'm wrestling that same thing every week, I'm going to wrestling instead of, you know, fine-tuning that skill. I think by the time I finished wrestling in high school, I could actually hit a pretty good inside step or a high crotch. But, you know, as a heavyweight, that just didn't seem to work out too well with these big guys. But it helped me practice more. I'd go to practice 3 times a week in the off season and then during the wrestling season. And I didn't get a whole lot of mat time, but I was still learning. And when I would go in and wrestle matches against guys, you know, at open tournaments and such, I would end up beating them because I actually had a fairly good technique that I had honed in practice that worked. Granted, I didn't have enough time to develop all those skills over a lifetime of wrestling, but I think at the younger age, you practice more, compete less. I don't think a national championship for a 7-year-old is something we should be doing, but you know, I could, you know, there's a split opinion on that, but I just think if you practice more, you end up fine-tuning those good habits. You don't develop a bad habit. And then when you get into the competition mode, you've had enough practice to know, okay, this is how I cleanly finish a takedown. And then when we get into freestyle and Greco, you're learning more positions that help your folk style. So you're not sitting in a crackdown finish and not knowing how to finish it. Whereas in freestyle, you know, you can pop your hips up and get some points out of it. And you might end up getting control out of it that way versus just sitting in that same finish waiting for a stalemate. So I am a proponent of more practice, less competition until you get to that elite level high school age. Dennis, your thoughts? I realize I threw a lot at you there.
No, I agree. I think right now one factor we don't look at with young kids starting and competing a ton is the rate at which wrestlers quit the sport. I think right now we push youth wrestling way too hard in this country, and the kids don't have the skill sets, and they go out there and they get beat up 2 tournaments in a row and they quit the sport. I think we need to do what you said exactly is, you know what, get these kids the basic skills, get them body awareness, get them where every kid can do a cartwheel, get them where they can do front handsprings, get them where they can do a good bridge, you know, where their necks are strong. We got to develop the entire body before we throw them out to the wolves. I mean, I always tell kids, I said, you know, I coach a kids club for a living, but I say, guys, right now we're not training for the state tournament. We ain't learning a particular move for a state tournament to win a state tournament. I said, I'd much rather have you lose the state tournament because you got caught with garbage from a kid that only has one move that doesn't work when he gets to high school. I said, but we're going to keep working on the fundamentals and continue to embrace practice and learn and get better. And, you know, I tell my wrestlers, I'm coaching you to become high school state champions, college All-Americans, national champions, and hopefully someday Olympians. And, you know, my mindset ain't to win at the moment and teach stuff that works at certain age levels. You know, and I think we got to get coaches out of doing that. I think there's too many coaches that teach the technique that wins at the certain age level because they want their kids winning instead of teaching them the fundamentals that are going to help them be able to compete for a lot longer.
And Jason, along those lines, even Terry Steiner is doing a great job coaching, talks about bringing in some of those athletes in the first year, developing their foundation, practice, and skill sets, and then knowing their body style and type. And then the second year, getting matches, dealing with the mental part of it, dealing with then, hey, when their holds aren't working. And then the third and fourth year, it's really about performance and results. But, you know, when the coaches can set up a vision for where they want the student athletes, I mean, really, can a first year fourth grader be unsuccessful if they're giving their full effort and they're following your game plan? If you're making it all about that season for that kid and having them unsuccessful, are you really being a successful coach? We need to paint a vision like Dennis is for those youth wrestlers and set them up for success about where we're trying to develop them to be the best potential as a student athlete. And along the way, it's about the process they get to develop as a human being through the sport.
Now, one thing that was stressed, Dennis, you mentioned it with the gymnastics. I can't remember which coach said it recently, but they said that they were putting their kid into gymnastics because it's a great foundation for almost every sport, building body awareness. I mean, back to my one of my first practices in high school, you know, we were, you know, warming up, and Coach Billy Ruff goes, all right, let's see who the athletes are. And he'd had everybody do cartwheels and some tumbling, like tumbling, not flips or anything, but, you know, things that would say it. And he was rolling through, and these two twins that were soccer players that had wrestled since they were kids, they're just firing them off, our four-time state champs, just doing it. And then I go up there, I hit a cartwheel. He goes, well, Bryant's not. And, you know, it's one of those things. I didn't compete in gymnastics as a kid. I mean, I was so stiff. And I think what we've seen is obviously with Mark Schultz, who is, you know, his name's been thrown around a lot recently because of the Foxcatcher movie. But, you know, Mark's background was gymnastics before he wrestled. And it was that background, knowing your body and your flexibility. So, I mean, if there's anything, I think they're hey, why not a movement with USA Wrestling and USA Gymnastics to be like, hey, you know, let's cross train a little bit.
I agree. I mean, I think if the kids understand how their body works, then you got a better chance to succeed in this sport. If you don't know, you know, how your body's going to react in certain situations. And that's why I, in my club, I do a lot of tumbling. I mean, we do the cartwheels, we do front handsprings, we do egg rolls, we do all the things in our warm-up to get these guys to understand their body. And I think that's huge. And these guys are able to figure out which way to turn. You know, I think one thing that is huge is teaching hip ice for kids. You know, that's a skill that's been lost in our sport. A lot of kids don't know how to do it. I have our kids doing it.
I know, I'm still stiff. I mean, I end up trying to hip heist when I get up and playing with my daughter on the floor, and it's like, oh, didn't learn how to do this properly when I was a kid. John, you're almost there. You, when you get there and you're going to be playing with your son on the floor, you're going to be like, okay, I've got a hip heist here.
Yeah.
Now, as we move on, we had a big duel, and Iowa this year, it looks like they're going to break the 100,000 spectator mark in terms of how many people have watched them this year, home and away. A lot of that was coming with their just fierce fan base that draws big at Carver-Hawkeye, but also their road presence. Them and Penn State seem to draw very well on the road. And when Iowa went to Penn State, 15,900 and change, just short of the record. And watching this thing on the Big Ten Network, it was at the Bryce Jordan Center, and I want to get both of your guys' thoughts on, you know, what that means for wrestling. It's more than just, you know, we've seen the big crowds at Iowa and Penn State, and then we're seeing, crowds approaching records, and then we're seeing the draws that Penn State and Iowa are seeing. You know, this has to be moving the needle in a positive direction.
Yeah, especially if Iran, you know, is trying for the Guinness Book of Records with, you know, their 8,000 fans, and you got, what, 15,000 fans over there in Penn State. And I think Brand said he went up to the athletic director and congratulated him because he knows that that's good for the sport to get it into a core Olympic sport to show that kind of engagement in USA Wrestling. It's big.
Yeah, and I hope that some of the other colleges out there could take away from how they promote, because promotion of the sport is huge. If these guys, these coaches can get it out to their students that are on campus and all their fans that are statewide, hopefully attendance can keep growing at every college.
Now, as we go into the postseason now, we are entering postseason for a lot of schools in high school wrestling around the country, and then we're a couple weeks away from the colleges getting started. So, Dennis, we'll focus this with you right now. Is we're looking at the state series coming up for a lot of places, and when you're looking at the high school wrestlers having gone through a season, let's look at it from not the elite level kid, the kid that's going to win a state title, but the kid that's trying to qualify for states for the first time. He might be a first or second year kid. You know, what would you preach to those type of kids when they're going in to their district, regional, or sectional meet, that knowing that they need to qualify to get to the next round, and, you know, success might be hit or miss in some places?
I think a lot of it is this week they need to be focusing on maybe an area or two where they're weak. Now, if you focus on your weakness, you make it a little bit more of a strength. It gives you a better chance to win that that match that you might not have won if you haven't focused on your weaknesses. Right now I do a special session for my high school kids that came in the fall. I just started it last week. It's on Sundays. And what we did is I came in, talked about the toughness part, about the hand fighting, about setting your opponent up. Then after that, we did about 20, 25 minutes. Okay, guys, where are you guys struggling? What do you need help with? And, you know, it's just troubleshooting at this point. You know, all the work is done. You're already in great shape. you're in the best shape you're going to be in. So now it's just fixing the little problems, you know, whether it's on your penetration step, on a shot, you ain't getting a corner good enough, or if on bottom you're moving good, but the guys are always catching your wrist. Okay, you're missing the hand control part. So I do a lot of focusing on that type of stuff right now, because you ain't going to change much, but if you can change one or two little things that make a big difference, you're giving your kids a better chance.
Now, John, on the collegiate level, obviously the Division III championships end before the Division I's do, and your postseason starts a little bit earlier. You know, same question for your college guys. Obviously, you've got your Hammers, and then you've got your guys that are looking to qualify for Nationals. What's the mindset there with those guys?
Well, do what they do in a lot of execution sets and high intensity and, you know, like Dennis said, one-on-one times, a few sessions in there, you know, one-on-one sets, and just making sure that guys are healthy and their mentality is ready to go, and then, you know, their tactics are ready for the matchups that they're going to prepare for. So it's a time to get ready to execute at a high level of confidence.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.